third of the gospel of Luke, we read verses 24 through 30 in chapter 22, and I reference Calvin Stanley's word for it. Luke chapter 22, beginning in verse 24. Then a dispute arose among them about who should be considered the greatest. But he said to them, "The king of the Gentiles lorded over them, and those who have authority over them have themselves called benefactors. It is not to be like that among you. On the contrary, whoever is greatest among you should become like the youngest, and whoever leads like the one serving. For who is greater, the one at the table or the one serving? Isn't it the one at the table? But I am among you as the one who serves. You are those who stood by me in my trials. I bestow on you a kingdom, just as my Father bestowed one on me, so that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and you will sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel." Wednesday, we were looking at the previous verses where Jesus celebrated the Passover with his disciples. He had sent them to go to the room that they would find by following somebody, a man carrying a water jar. And there would be an upper room prepared and furnished and ready for the feast. And Peter and John followed Jesus' directions. They found a man carrying a water jar, which was a little bit unusual because that was the woman's job at that time. But for whatever reason, it could have been like today, where I got to church. I didn't try playing the piano. I tried playing the music box that has the songs on it. And even with that, it showed that I had a little difficulty punching in and getting the right number on that last song, even though I punched the numbers in right. But it didn't like me. Well, maybe his wife was sick, and he was doing her job, going down to the well, getting the water. And, you know, sometimes we don't like doing other people's jobs. And I sort of picture in mind, I'm having to do her job today. But not realizing that with him doing the unusual job, he was leading to the room where Jesus was going to celebrate the Passover feast. Well, Peter and John followed the man into the house and said, "The master wants to celebrate the Passover here." And there was a room, just like Jesus said, prepared. Now, I told you that I've been to that room. What they say is over. Even though the room has an architecture of being built in the Middle Ages, not in the first century AD, but it's a neat place to go. It's possibly a chance that it was the right location, but interesting, on my tour, I went to the tomb of David, and it was, I found out by just being curious, because you go into this building, it's a two-story building, you go in, and there's a sarcophagus, that's supposed to be the tomb of David, and there's a stairwell over to the side that's chained off. I went and looked up there, couldn't see what was up there. And then, that was in the morning. In the afternoon, they took us to the upper room, a medieval architecture, Gothic-style columns, and there's a stairwell in the corner. I'm curious. I go over, look down. It's David's tomb down there. Now, if it had been exactly that place, when the disciples said, "Where do you want us to eat Passover?" He said, "Oh, in the room above David's tomb." No. It's just, there are places that we don't know for sure where the actual place was. And it's not the place, it's the person that they've imported. Now, I got to tell you this humorous thing I saw. This happened to be the church that came late to Jerusalem. All the other good sites were taken. There's a church of a crowing rooster. Supposedly built on the site where the rooster was, the crow, when Peter denied Jesus. So, all the other places, the upper rooms taken, the Golgotha's taken, all that's left is the crowing rooster room. It might have been the place where the rooster was, but there are no documentations from roosters dating from the first century exactly where the location was. It doesn't matter. It's all going to pass away. There's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. Everything's going to be made right. But Jesus is celebrating the Passover with his disciples. Now, the Passover is the festival that reminds the people of Israel of God's protection. The nation of Israel was in captivity in Egypt. They had lived in captivity for 430 years, and they were relegated to the place of being slave labor. Well, God appeared to Moses when he was in the wilderness and said, "Go to Pharaoh and tell him, I say, let my people go." Moses came to Pharaoh, and there were 10 plagues, all addressed at the false gods of Egypt. And if you look at each plague and the mythos, the gods, quote unquote, of Egypt, each one of the plagues dealt with one of those gods. Well, the last plague was the plague of death of the firstborn child, firstborn male child in every household, and that included the animals on the barn too. Well, there was going to be a death angel that's going to come through Egypt, and it's going to kill the firstborn male in every building. But there was a way to keep the firstborn male from dying. Sacrifice a lamb and take the blood and put it on the doorpost. And when the death angel came and saw the blood of the lamb on the post, the death angel would pass over that house and there'd be no death. Can you imagine somebody trying to fight the death angel? Now, in 2 Kings, when Sennacherib had surrounded Jerusalem and made fun of the God of Israel, one angel came through and killed over 200,000 of Sennacherib's soldiers in one night. Now, there's no superhero that can fight a death angel. Well, you see the futility of trying to protect your life or the life of the firstborn by your own efforts. It's impossible. There has to be the blood of the Lamb. Jesus came as that sacrificial lamb to take away the sins of the world. And he is celebrating and fulfilling God's promise to pass over the consequences of our sin because of his blood being used to pay our debt. And Jesus is celebrating the Passover with his disciples. But he says, one of you that is right here in this room with me will betray me. And they begin arguing, who is it going to be? You know, in classrooms, there's some students that think they're very subtle. And the teacher will ask something like, who wrote that on the board? And everybody turns and looks at one specific student. Because everybody knew it. Well, when Jesus said, one of you is going to betray me, they didn't all turn and look at Judas. They didn't know. And they all said, is it me? Is it me? And even a little bit later, Jesus says to Judas, what you need to do, go do now. And it says the other disciples thought that Jesus was telling him to go give some money to the poor because he was the treasurer. Well, they're arguing about who it is. But it doesn't take long when their conversation changes to who's the greatest. Well, if we can't figure out who's the worst, let's figure out who's the best. Let's have an argument here. Jesus has just said he's about to die, and someone's going to betray him, and they're talking about who's the greatest. I saw an interview of the vice president, and he was asked the question about Marco Rubio. And he said, we're best friends. And verse says, aren't you rivals? Isn't it going to come up that you're going to be competing against each other? He said, no. If we act as rivals and consider each other as rivals, what each of us is supposed to do, we will not do, and we will not do what is best for the country. So we're going to do what's best for the country. Rivals, that could be later on. That's a long way off. We need to do what's best for the country right now. We just saw the opposite effect. We had two groups of people in Washington that were not doing what's best for the country. They were trying to make political statements instead of going, what's best for our country? Let's do what's best for our country. Well, Jesus has said, you shouldn't be arguing about who's the greatest. There was, I remember one person that used to say, I am the greatest. Well, in 2016, that person, Muhammad Ali, went to face the one who is the greatest. He died, and he faced the greatest, the King of Kings, and the Lord of Lords. Now, part of Muhammad Ali's was just trying to intimidate his opponent. Well, Jesus is talking to his disciples. You shouldn't do that, because the world does that. Don't be like the pagans. Don't be like the world, because those that are in power want you to acknowledge that they're the ones in power. There's the person that's in charge, not me. They want to be pointed out as the one in power. And then they want you to tell them how thankful you are about what they do. They're my benefactor. I couldn't do it without them. Now, interesting thing happened with the shutdown. Most of us didn't notice. Government shutdown, still, with the exception of some groups of people, didn't see the impact at all. Well, the government is not the solution. Jesus is. And he has come, said, don't act like the world. I'm the solution. And then turn to the Gospel of John. John chapter 13. Luke does not record this event, but as John says at the end of his Gospel, everything that Jesus said and did, there's not enough books in the world to write that all down. But I've written down what's needed so that you can believe that Jesus is the one. John records a little more detail of that last week of Jesus' ministry. And look at verse 1 of chapter 13 of John. John chapter 13. Before the Passover festival, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from the world to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Now when it was time for supper, so that puts us at the same time as the passage in Luke, the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas, Simon Iscariot's son, to betray him. praying. Jesus knew that the Father had given everything into his hands, that he had come from the Father, come from God, and that he was going back to God. So he got up from supper, laid aside his outer clothing, took a towel, tied it around himself, next to the water into a basin, and began to wash his disciples' feet and to dry them with a towel tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who asked him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I am doing, you don't realize now, but afterward you will understand." "You will never wash my feet," Peter said. Jesus replied, "If I don't wash you, you have no part with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not only my feet, but also my hands and my head." "One who has bathed," Jesus told him, "doesn't need to wash anything except his feet, but he is completely clean. You are clean, but not all of you, for he knew who would betray him. This is why he said, 'Not all of you are clean.'" When Jesus had washed their feet and put on his outer clothing, he reclined again and said to them, "Do you know what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are speaking rightly, since that is what I am. So, if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done. Truly, I tell you, a servant is not greater than his master, and a messenger is not greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them." Now, back to our passage in Luke. They're arguing about which one of us is greatest. We can't figure out which one's worse, but we can figure out who's greatest. And Jesus said, "You've got the wrong attitude. You shouldn't be focused on yourself. You should be focused on others." And in our passage, same chapter of John, 13, verse 34 and 35, he says, "A new commandment I give you, love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples." Instead of arguing about who's the greatest, you need to be showing love for one another. Jesus went on, and he said, "I bestow on you a kingdom, just as my Father bestowed one on me, so that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and you will sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel." Your reward's going to come, but it's going to be later. In Revelation chapter 21, verses 1 through 4, it talks about the new heaven and the new earth. And it tells us he will wipe away every tear. There'll be no more death, no more grief, no more crying, no more pain. And as we get older, we know more and more about grief, crying, and pain. And sometimes we're in grief, crying about our pain. So we put it all together. But that's all passing away. And that's later. But until then, guess what? We're going to have grief, crying, and pain. We're going to have tears. Because we're still living in a sin-cursed world. Jesus says, your reward is going to come later. You need to focus on others. In Proverbs chapter 3, verses 27 through 28, it tells us, if someone is in need and you have the resources to help them, you need to help them. It's echoed in James chapter 2, verse 14 and following. It says, if you see a brother in need and you say, "I'll pray for you," but don't help his need, what good is it? If you have the resources, tell them. And also, in 1 John chapter 3, verses 17 and 18, it says, if someone has goods and someone has need, you should share with the one in need. So that deals with our physical possessions. If we have something that somebody needs, and that doesn't mean go out and borrow money to help somebody else, and you don't have it. It's if you have it, and God blesses us with resources to help others. Sometimes, you know, God blesses us with lack of resources so other people can help us. A lot of us like to share, but not very many people like to receive, especially the church. Now, there's other people outside the church they like to receive, but if you're being offered something and you have need, don't steal the blessing from somebody else. They get a blessing from sharing with you. Our attitude should be different. Turn with me to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, beginning verse 3. Do nothing. There's not a piercing. Some people in churches today put a period there. What's your Christian life like? Why do Philippians 2:3? Do nothing. No, it doesn't have a period there. Let's keep going. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility consider others as more important than yourself. Everyone should look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. So it's not saying don't be concerned about taking care of yourself and what you need, but you also need to focus on other people. And then in Romans chapter 12, verse 10, it almost makes it a competition. It says, outdo one another in doing good. You know, sometimes there's competitions in the classroom at school, and there's little posters, and they have little bar graphs. Who can do the best completing a certain number of math or other kind of problems? They try to get as many things covered in, and they're trying to compete about doing the most amount of math or English or other academics. Well, Scripture tells us we need to outdo one another in doing good. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, it says we need to carry one another's burdens. So when there's bad times, we need to be helping others. And 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says we need to encourage one another. Some days it gets very discouraging. But remember, this is only temporary. We're living in a sin-cursed world that will end soon when Christ returns. And there'll be a new heaven and a new earth with no more pain, no more crying, no more grief. When Jesus comes, make everything new. And 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10, it says, use the gifts that God has given you to serve others. God has given you gifts. And they're not just to build yourself up, but to serve others. And then Ephesians 4:32 tells us to forgive one another just as we have been forgiven. If we have physical resources, we need to share them with those in need. If we see someone in a difficult situation, we're to encourage them. We're to focus on other people above ourselves. We're to remember God is involved in giving us the resources to share with others. And sometimes those resources are the ability to do something. I think it's still down in Montana. There's a place called God's Garage. And there's people that know how to tinker with cars. And they help people that don't have the resources to get their car fixed. to get their car fixed. They have a ministry there helping people get their car fixed. God is not necessarily giving them the financial ability to give somebody a new car, but to get the old one running where it's dependable. God's given people resources to do a variety of things. But we need to remember also, we are forgiven. And we're not to hold grudges against other people. We're to forgive as we're forgiven. How do we want God to forgive us? Well, we want God to say, you know, I can forgive that thing and that thing, but that thing over there, that's too much for me to forgive. He forgives everything. Sometimes we hold grudges. We won't forgive others. And a lot of times it's just a misunderstanding. There's a story I was told about these two women that haven't talked to each other in years. Finally, they got them together. And they found out the situation was one of them had been walking up to another to talk to them. And that other person stuck their nose up there and won't talk and ignored them. The one that stuck their nose up earlier said, I remember that. I had a cold that day, but I didn't have any Kleenexes. And so I stuck my whole head up, and I was going to the bathroom to get some Kleenexes. It was a misunderstanding. But sometimes there are real reasons. People do things to us. You know why? They're sinners. And we do things to people because we're sinners. But we're to forgive others in the same way that we have lived for. Our attitude should be good. And just like Jesus said in John 11:34, a new commandment I give you, love one another as I have loved you. By this all men will know that you are my disciples. Our love for one another. The world needs to see different people. Not just different clothes. Not just wearing a cross around our neck. But our attitudes need to be different when we consider one another. That's what Jesus did in the disciples. Remember the setting. Jesus is settling with God. One of you is going to betray me. They said, which one of us is the greatest? Oh. Often. Now, I think the artist did it wrong with the picture of Jesus. He should have a flat spot on his forehead when he keeps going, disciples, disciples, disciples. When will they get it? We're the same way. Jesus will be doing that. When will those people in Northridge get it? When will the people in Conroe get it? When will the people in all the churches get it? When we realize who we are, who Jesus is. He is the name of the blessings. Let us follow his plan. Remember Jesus, when they're arguing, washed their feet. He even washed the feet of Judas. Now let me explain why they washed the feet. They wore sandals and they had dirt roads. So when you're walking, your feet would get dirty just by walking on dirt road. So the guest would have the one that hosted a party would have someone there to wash the guest's feet. And Jesus, the most important person in that room, washed his disciples' feet. Even the one that within a few hours was going to come and betray him. Even the one who had kept his foot in his mouth, Peter. You know, Peter's the one that always has to say something even when he doesn't know what to say. he's going to later brag about, I'll never leave you. And he's the one that the Crow Rooster Church is based on. Because Jesus said, where the rooster crows, you don't do much time. Jesus knew what was going to happen, knew who was speaking of watching, but he came to a different space. We all have that opportunity to remember what Jesus is doing, and to the best of our ability, consider one another. Can you imagine? Like that. I'll finish with one old joke. There's a, I got a vinyl LP from this guy, Brother Dave Barber. Brother Dave's comedian. He said, I had this vision of heaven and hell. I went to hell. And they showed me what it's like. He said, this big, long table full of all the best kind of food you could want. And everybody was sitting at the table, one hand tied behind their back. And on the other hand was a spoon. They might have little sports. But it was a spoon that was 3 foot long. And if you try it, you're not going to be able to get anything to your mouth with a spoon 3 foot long. All that great food is there. And they couldn't get any of it. So, show me heaven. Said it looked exactly the same way. Except for a feeding on the mouth. I was going to look out my mouth. Standing in front of them. Lord, I thank you that you showed us and taught us that we need to be concerned about one another. It doesn't matter what position we are in. We're to be servants to one another. We're to be concerned with one another. We're to share with one another. Because each of us has been forgiven by you. Let us remember to be different from you.